I'm going to start this presentation with another reading from A.A. Milne. This is from The House at Blue Corner. And if anybody is familiar with the book, the way it's laid out is each chapter has things like when this happens, when that happens. So this is from the section called Tigger Comes to the Forest. Winnie the Pooh woke up suddenly in the middle of the night and listened. Then he got out of bed and lit his candle and stomped across the room to see if anyone was trying to get into his honey cupboard. And they weren't. So he stomped back again, blew out his candle and got into bed. Then he heard the noise again. "Is that you, Piglet?" Winnie the Pooh said, but it wasn't. "Come in, Christopher Robin," he said. But Christopher Robin didn't. "Tell me about it tomorrow, Eeyore," said Pooh sleepily. But the noise went on. Said whatever it was. And Pooh found that he wasn't asleep after all. "What can it be?" he thought. He got out of bed and opened his front door. "Hello," said Pooh. "Hello," said whatever it was. "Oh, there, come in." So whatever it was came in. And in the light of the candle, he and Pooh looked at each other. "I'm Pooh."
"I'm Tigger."
"Oh," said Pooh, for he had never seen an animal like this before. "Well," said Pooh, "it's the middle of the night, which is a good time for going to sleep, and tomorrow morning we'll have some honey for breakfast. Do Tiggers like honey?"
"They like everything,"
said Tigger cheerfully.
"Excuse me for a moment, but there's something climbing up your table." And with one loud he jumped to the end of the tablecloth, pulled it to the ground, wrapped himself up three times, rolled to the other end of the room, and after a terrible struggle, got his head into the daylight again and said cheerfully, "Have I won?"
"That's my tablecloth," said Pooh, as he began to unwind Tigger.
"I wondered what that was," said Tigger.
"It goes on the table and you put things on it."
"Then why did it try to bite me when I wasn't looking?"
"I don't think it did," said Pooh.
"It tried, but I was too quick for it."
Pooh put the cloth back on the table and he put a large honey pot on the cloth and they sat down to breakfast. And as soon as they sat down, Tigger took a large mouthful of honey and he looked up at the ceiling with his head on one side and made exploring noises with his tongue and considering noises and "What have we got here?" noises. And then he said in a very decided voice, "Tiggers don't like honey." "Oh," said Pooh, and tried to make it sound sad and regretful. "I thought they liked everything."
"Everything except honey," said Tigger.
So my main presentation is entitled Refuge from the Revelry. In a month of revelry, this will be the only time that I mention the theme. That's because my presentation is about another R word, refuge. And to illuminate on how my understanding of what the word means or represents to me has changed over time, engagement and reflection. In the Oxford English Dictionary, the term refuge is defined as follows. A place that gives protection or shelter from danger, trouble, unhappiness, etc. On reflection, I realise that my sense of refuge probably started out from a point very similar to the one defined in the dictionary. But like most things in life, time and reflection has led me to a very different and deeper understanding of its usage of the word. I'm not necessarily saying the definition as in the dictionary has changed for me, it's just I have a deeper understanding of what that definition might represent within certain contexts. Part of this slow paradigm shift has been a realisation that there is a difference, for me at least, in taking refuge from, in contrast to, taking refuge in.
It is easy to confuse and mislabel the two, certainly in my case. So here's a brief romp through some of the many things that have helped shape my sense of refuge. So anybody that hasn't listened to me talk before and hasn't heard some of the sort of preambles that have been given about my background, as a child, I attended a Church of England school, as it is not uncommon in the UK. And even with parents who look to the Anglican Church for mainly moral guidance rather than spiritual guidance, it was somewhat inevitable that I would become fascinated by the physical layout of the local parish church. Even today, I actually find the structure and aesthetics of old stern churches both fascinating and somewhat comforting. I think it was my grandfather, a retired Metropolitan Police officer, who told me that there was a place within the church where a criminal could evade capture by seeking sanctuary. Actually, English history surrounding the concept of sanctuary in churches is pretty fascinating and warrants a talk all of its own, as probably does things like diplomatic immunity or leaving the European Union. But let's just say the concepts are far more complex than my grandfather's very succinct explanation. However, the thought of my grandfather's attempt to apprehend a member of the criminal fraternity being scuppered by running into a church for sanctuary fueled my youthful imagination. Another big institution in the UK is the BBC, and particularly I'm thinking of the BBC 6 o'clock news. The British Broadcasting Corporation, yeah, for those that are not familiar. At school age, the 6 o'clock news on the BBC for me was essential viewing. I have always had an interest in global news, and the coverage of such news by the BBC is very good. So my next opportunity to reflect on concepts of refuge would have come about through exposure to the numerous human displacements that have played out through news stories. Through these news stories, one gets a feel of the displacement that happens when people realise that their only course of action is to get away from their immediate and possible life-threatening situation. With this personal realisation also comes the sad feeling that the suffering of a large number of refugees the world over never seems to end and does not seem to have got much better, despite the best efforts of organisations and individuals. Another area of reflection for me on refuge is through work. Anybody here who's been in a position where they have had an intensely interesting and absorbing, fulfilling job can understand the concept of taking refuge in work, I think. This can be particularly acute when one is in a position to have not much going on outside of work, or the nature of the work results in a lot of time spent what I would call on-premises. I like to feel that I've always been able to maintain a good, what they call, work-life balance, and not been in a position where I've sought refuge from the outside world through absorption in work. Although I have heard several apocryphal stories of staff, particularly within the technical or gaming industry, being so obsessed with work that they've slept under their desks. My actual worry with this sort of obsessional work ethos is that, and I assume here the employee is logically conscious of what they are doing, and they are actually working in a for-profit business, the employer is actually relying on their charity-based productivity. And I don't feel that that's actually a long-term sustainable business model. Also through my life, I've considered how I might take refuge in music. I make no secret about my passion for music. Not surprisingly, there have been many times when I've taken refuge in music, whether it's been for short periods of almost meditative contemplation, or longer periods of lost days or weekends spent with a set of headphones, a favourite album, and a good fantasy or sci-fi novel. I hasten to add that's not something I actually do nowadays, but in my youth I probably did that quite a bit. You really can become lost in music, caught in a trap, to quote Sister Sledge from their 70s disco classic Lost in Music. But I feel that probably one of the greatest forms of music personally that I used to seek refuge in is classical music, and particularly like movement-based classical music. It's very easy to have lost time becoming absorbed in that sort of musical form. In play, there are many instances where people seek refuge, and certainly there are many times in my life when I find my life outside of work much more interesting than life inside of work. So I can easily see how hobbies, pastimes and socialising can become a refuge from the day-to-day drudgery of the 9-to-5 or 7-to-7 grind. Of course, if your job is also your hobby, then that can raise a quite interesting set of challenges. I think one of my biggest revelations about the concept of refuge came about through my engagement in Buddhist thought. So when I first became exposed to Buddhism, I misunderstood the Buddhist concept of refuge. As up to that point, I had always thought mainly of taking refuge from. I did not understand what taking refuge in and its implications might be. However, eventually I got it, I think. And here's the most important part that I got, which then caused this sort of revelation in refuge. The three jewels, also called the three treasures, three refuges, precious triad, or most commonly the triple gem, are the three things that Buddhists take refuge in and look towards for guidance in the process known as taking refuge. And just to clarify here, the three jewels are the first one, Buddha, the enlightened or awakened one. And depending on one's interpretation, it can mean the historical Buddha or Buddhist nature, the potential for high spiritual achievement that exists within all beings. Secondly, Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, the path to enlightenment. And thirdly, Sangha, the community of those who have attained enlightenment, who may help a practicing Buddhist to do the same, also used more broadly to refer to the community of practicing Buddhists, or the community of Buddhist monks and nuns, depending on your sort of point of insight, I suppose. So thinking about all these things, I then began to think about refuge in life generally. So I think armed with a better understanding, particularly of Buddhism and that concept of taking refuge, specifically what the three jewels represent, I was able to consider the possibility that one should strive to seek refuge in life itself, in totality. All the answers to a good life, for me, seem to be in the refuge of living. It also makes me realise that previous to my better understanding of refuge, when I thought about taking refuge, maybe I was confusing it with something equally important, that of taking sanctuary. Not that seeking sanctuary is a bad thing, just that confusing interpretations can be a bad thing. So I think in summary, I believe that we should take refuge all the time, and sometimes, but still as part of our day-to-day refuge, we do need to seek sanctuary. Thank you.